And we are back with you and talking with Ingo Swann tonight about his amazing new book, Secrets of Power. This is really an unprecedented treatment of the subject that keeps us all in our places. Ingo, have you studied India when you looked at all these various applications of power and how it's divvied up and that caste, that remarkable caste system they have?
I talk about issues, not about people.
But that's a scene over there.
Oh, yeah, but even more interesting, well, I mean, not more interesting, but certainly interesting, there's a new book that came out last year about the British Raj in India, the rise and fall of the British Raj in India.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if I gave a course in power studies, I'd have people read that book because there are examples of just about everything I put in my book. In this whole, I mean, this guy's really frank about this, and you can see this unfolding. It's a model for many, almost, well, many of the aspects that I've talked about in my own book.
Mm-hmm.
You can find examples in it. It's a wonderful book.
Fascinating. All right, let's go take a call or two and say hi to John in Phoenix, Arizona. Hello, John. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jeff. How are you?
Fine, thanks.
Ingo, how do you do?
How do you do?
Really nice. I like the content of what we're speaking of tonight. It's enjoyable.
Good.
And I have two questions and briefly set it up. Some years ago, there was a science magazine laying around the house that had an Are You a Genius test in it. I don't think I'm a genius, don't get me wrong. But it was a pretty good-sized article, and it explained the only rule, take the test and there's no time limit. You had to pretty much just juggle imagery and interconnectedness of events. And I was living with a PhD at the time. She took it and got four right. I took it and got them all right. And she really got mad at me. But what I was wondering is, where can I find material such as this to exercise my mind with, and can you make money at it?
I think you should be in touch with the Mensa Society.
Okay.
I don't know where to direct you to it, but there's probably a branch in Phoenix, and they could have all that kind of information at hand for you.
Okay, that's a good idea.
Mensa, that's supposed to be the Society of High IQs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Supposed to be.
Well, you never know.
Just ask them. Just ask them. They'll tell you.
I've made a goof on the air, and I apologize to the Mensa Society already. Oh dear.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks,
okay,
John.
I appreciate it.
Thanks for the call. Let's stay with the theme of the moment and take another John from El Cerrito, California. Hello, John number two. How are you?
Yes, fine. Hello, Ingo.
Hello.
Yeah, I'm. Sort of I don't know what you call a natural remote viewer, but every time I try that, I have the imagination thing that creeps in and messes me up.
Yes.
And actually, it's used as a cue, and once the imagination, I'm able to get through that part of it, and I'm able to tune it out, it just gradually gets, I'm able to filter through it, and then I can get it clear.
That's right.
And but I have to go through that imagination thing first as a sort of, it cues the other thing.
Oh, well.
And that's the way it works for me. And I've heard that the worst thing you can have with remote viewing is an imagination. it's not compatible, and that's true. But I just wanted to let you know my experience.
Well, that's an interesting one, yeah.
And I use it in a different way. Once I get through when I'm trying to focus on something, it takes maybe a couple months before everything gets filtered out.
That can happen, yes.
And then I start to get the real stuff, and gradually I get it all, but it usually takes months.
There's a famous book written in, it was published in 1947, translated from the French by René Warcollier, and it had to do with telepathy. And he was the first one really to say that when you're trying to be in telepathic contact with a distant target or somebody, that there can often be a time delay for the information getting through. And the reason he gave for this is that the information leaving the sender goes in, breaks apart into many pieces, which we would refer to as information points, and is sent across space, and then it has to be reconstructed in the mind of the receiver.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes this can take as much as 2 weeks.
Right.
Ah, 2 weeks.
Yep.
Well, yeah, that sounds interesting, but mine takes months. It seems to be like maybe 6 or 8 months before I finally get it all settled down.
Well,
it's a long time. It seems just like, but at first I get a flood of stuff, and it just jams me.
And then you have to, something in your system goes to work and sorts it out.
And then I just have to put it out of my mind for as long as it takes, and then
right.
I come back to it maybe 3-6 months later, and then it seems to be clear.
Then it's clear. Right.
And that's my experience in my case, and it's always worked for me, but I don't do remote viewing all that often.
Well, congratulations for getting it at all.
Yeah, right, but
okay.
It's just something that I do when it just naturally occurs,
right.
When I'm tuned for it.
Very good. Thank you, John.
Yes. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening very much. El Cerrito, California, up to Portland, Oregon, and welcome Rob to the program. Okay, Rob, your turn.
Hi, thanks for taking my call, Jeff.
You're welcome.
It's an honor, Ingo. I'm a student of your work.
Oh, well, thank you.
I have a couple of questions. Did you develop this power view while you were fine-tuning your psi abilities? Or
I didn't get the word you read. Did I develop what?
Your views on power while you were using your psi abilities.
Yeah,
well,
while you were kind of fine-tuning, or, you know, while you started really using your psi abilities, did these power things come into
clear? The relationship was that people have these psi abilities, but they're depowered in most people. They're not allowed to be nurtured and things like that. So that was the connection between power and these abilities. I think we probably, parapsychology identifies about 9 different so-called ESP or psychic abilities, but I can identify 350 of them.
Wow.
And this is, this what we call psi and other thing is just the tip of a hidden iceberg of all of these other subsidiary powers that are necessary for bigger powers to work.
Hmm. Do you think that so-called powerful people work to squelch spirituality?
Well, I think that's a political question. Spirituality can be utilized as a political instrument to unify masses of people and things like that. And I don't particularly like to discuss political issues.
Oh, okay. Did you find any spirituality while you were working with Psi?
Well, that depends on what you're defining as spirituality.
Oh.
I encounter the oneness of the universe?
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Ah. I found that.
Yeah.
It's quite interesting. Wow. It's been an honor to talk to you. I won't take any more time.
Well, thank you.
Thanks, Rob. Thank you.
Have a good day.
Thanks. Just had, I think, some friends of yours, Ingo, Lynn Schroeder, and Sheila Ostrander.
Oh, where are they? I haven't seen them for years.
They were on this program.
Terrific.
For 3 hours talking about things that talked about you in just wonderful, glowing terms as being a dear friend.
They're such special people. They really are.
Well, they are. They're going to come back on the program for 3 more hours. And if you are able to access, and all of you listening, they were on the show on the 8th of this month. And,
what did they talk about?
Oh, their early work with
the whole
discoveries that they accrued at the.
I haven't seen them for quite some time.
Yeah.
I'm embarrassed to say how long, but I think the last time they seen them, they came to my house for a big dinner party I had.
That would have been one I'd like to have been there for. You know, I'll tell you, the thing that really I think got their interview off to such a remarkable start was their exposition that when they had gone to the Soviet Union and found out that there's psychic research ongoing there, and this is nothing I'm telling you, you don't know.
Yeah.
It was basically being pushed along by a paranoia that ET visitations were a problem and this area might be some kind of a defensive shield at some point.
That's true.
I
found out years later, there's some truth in that, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the Soviet Union, of course, was one, compared to North America, was one big landing pad I mean, they were apparently having things going on over there that
so
blatant. And right. Yeah, many, many people. 1-800-876-4123 if you'd like to talk to the amazing Ingo Swann. His new book, Secrets of Power, is now available, self-published, as he heard, or you heard him say in the first part of the program, because publishers don't want to touch. Did you have anybody interested in this at all? Did
no.
Some of the agents even say, yeah, it's pretty good, Ingo?
Oh, well, I had a literary agent then who passed it around in the early 90s. You know, there were still 15 major publishers left in Manhattan.
Uh-huh.
There used to be 60, you know.
Yeah, geez.
And none of them wanted it. But the comment came back, this is fabulous, it's interesting, but it's not for us.
Well, that's what I was expecting. Yeah, same kind of thing. All right, we'll take a break and come back. Talk to Ingo about his book and other things. So don't go away. Don't forget the website at Rense.com, R-E-N-S-E. Rense.com. Things happening around this world of ours all the time, and I try to give you a good cross-section of it, a nice view, an overview, as it were, with the mix of stories we put up there. So do check in and keep an eye out. Be right back. Ingo Swann is my guest, live from New York. How many years have you lived in New York, Ingo?
I came here in 1957.
Straight from Telluride?
No.
No, I'm just being
silly. Straight from Korea.
Korea, that was my next guess. Wow.
Yes, yes.
And the city has changed in some ways.
Completely. Completely.
It's like Los Angeles used to be in the 40s and 50s. It's not recognizable.
Yeah.
Not recognizable. I was there, my first trip ever to New York, three summers ago.
Oh, did you like it?
I felt like I was on another planet, to tell you the truth.
Oh, it is another planet.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely.
I was in a hotel two or three nights on Madison Avenue, and I would watch the street, and I would get the distinct impression that some people would come out of one large building, walk down the street, go into another for work, come out and go back to their other building.
Oh, well, that's...
Back and forth.
Case, yeah.
Back and forth. But beautiful, you know, outside the city and beautiful. I felt sorry for Central Park, frankly. It's a very pretty park, but the energy in there wasn't good, the human energy for me. It was mixed and there was some strangeness there.
That, well, all of Manhattan has mixed energies. That's part of the wonder of it.
But I guess the word is style. What a style it has.
Yeah.
Unbelievable style.
Yeah. It's been wonderful.
It's an extraordinary place on the planet. There's no doubt about it.
I'm planning to leave.
What?
I'm planning to leave.
Where are you going?
I don't know. It's too expensive here now. It costs a fortune.
Oh, it's silly. No, it is. It's silly time.
We're talking megabucks, you know.
Yeah, I know. My mother works there, and I hear, you know, that whole scene is, the dollars at that point, at that level, the money, it's just numbers for those people, a lot of them.
Well, you certainly can't worry what things cost anymore. You have to buy them anyway. So.
I went to a little store and bought, I think it was a bottle of orange juice. I think it was $3. A little bottle.
I don't know. Were you uptown?
I don't know, Ingo. I was
somewhere.
I was in the sort of the middle of it all.
Yeah. Well,
I was near the Knapp Communications building. Whatever. I don't know.
I ask you a question? What is this wonderful music you play on this show?
This music comes from Sean Cruz, who owns an endeavor and programs his own internet radio station called CosmicRadio.com.
I mean, I can't buy this on a...
Oh, it all comes from CDs, but it's a vast array of them that we've mixed into the program here. They all come from his programming mix, though. It's K-O-Z-M-I-K, CosmicRadio.com on the net. And he's way ahead of the game.
Wow. wonderful music.
He's way ahead of the game. Did you receive any music I sent you?
I did, and I appreciate it very much.
Good.
I haven't listened to it yet because I'm waiting for a special day.
You're doing the right thing.
Yes.
And I understand that 100%, and I will look forward.
That's a wonderful album of Mario Lanza.
And Ingo is a fan, and I look forward to hearing your
I actually heard the real Mario Lanza sing, you know.
That is fabulous.
I'm that old.
Well, that was 1951, 52, somewhere around
That's
there.
That's right.
And how was it when you heard him sing?
Terrific.
And just Ingo, terrific. Ingo has been going to opera forever. He knows them all.
Oh yeah, this was one tremendous voice. It truly was.
Well, wonderful. All right. Well, I'll look forward to your reaction to it when that moment arrives. 1-800-876-4123. We have a couple of people, several on the line holding. We've got just a minute till the break, so I don't want to take a call quite yet. Let me remind you, we're talking about Ingo's latest book, The Secrets of Power. And on my website, you can click right below his name and go to his website and take a look at some of his art. It is utterly Ingo.
Well, I have other people's art in my website, too.
Oh, you've added some.
Well, I'm going to add a museum module of this special kind of art, and I'm going to include about 40 artists in it.
Oh, nice. Very nice. They have, great, so you'll be able to tour other people's collections.
That's right. Other artists.
Did I ask you, do you know Kenneth Noland?
I know of him, yes.
Yeah. He's interesting.
Yeah.
All right, there are a lot of great artists, and when I was there, I did hit the museums, and fabulous. They had an entire Egyptian exhibit.
Oh, yes.
Brought over. I mean, they had
the Met, right.
Yeah. Uh-huh. It was time travel and everything else. It was wonderful. Wonderful. All right, we're going to pause and come right back and take some more of your phone calls and talk to Ingo Swann, whose earlier visits on this program are in the archives. And if you'd like to hear some amazing things, guarantee you. And every time we talk to Ingo, it's something different. Something unique. You're not in a rut. Ingo, you're truly a voyager.
Well, thank you.
You
for
are
noticing.
It's my business to notice.
Oh, thank
of your earlier books, which are your favorites? Very quickly, in the last minute here before we break, you've got some remarkable different titles here.
Well, I love all my books. I mean,
they're your children.
Artists do that. I mean, writers love all their things, you know.
Yeah, they're wonderful.
Hard to say.
All right, good answer. We'll pause and see you in just a very couple of minutes with Ingo and your calls. Sound like some music you'd hear in New York, Ingo?
No, that's Hollywood music.
See, how much I know.
It reminded me of Dorothy L'Amour.
That's good. That is a Dorothy L'Amour. That's good.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Let's say hello to Justin in Portland, Oregon. Hi, Justin.
Hi, Ingo. Hi,
hello.
Jeff.
Hello.
Hi there. I was just calling. It was fascinating what you said earlier about just the power that's just accepting their lot.
Yeah.
And I'm taking this course in world mythology, and it kind of reminds me of, we're reading Gilgamesh and also reading the Hindu Ramayana.
Uh-huh.
And it talks about Dharma and how, you know, just accepting your lot and these things happen and stuff like that. And have you read those two?
Yes, yes.
And also in Gilgamesh, when he's talking to the ill wife, and she's saying, well, you know, you can never attain the status of a god. You might as well just accept your lot and be merry, dance, and be happy and stuff. And I thought it kind of struck a chord when you were talking about, you know, just accepting your lot.
Right, right.
I was just wondering what you think about is mythology, you think?
To me, it may be mythology, and I'm certain there are good reasons for that kind of story, but it sounds like just propaganda.
Right, that's what I was thinking, like propaganda for controlling the masses,
right.
You know, mm-hmm. Even folklore.
Yes.
I mean, that was my question. I just wanted to know what you thought about that.
Well,
good.
There it is.
All right. Thanks, Justin.
Thanks, bye.
All right, let's head across country, not too far from the great state of New York. Alvinson, our buddy in Massachusetts. Hello, Alvin.
Hello there. How you doing?
I'm fine. How's yourself?
Good. I'm glad to hear you both.
Thank you.
I've got some very specific questions I got to ask.
All right.
One question is, do you think, Mr. Swan, that electrical fields, electromagnetic fields, interfere with or affect remote viewing and size?
Oh, definitely.
In a perceptible way?
We demonstrated that in our research during the 70s, or maybe it was the early 80s. I can't remember now. Definitely.
Huh.
Geomagnetic fields and electromagnetic fields and local magnetic fields can interfere with the electric field around the brain and sort of muck up perceptions and things like that.
Is there a residual effect? Because I tend to worry.
No, I think that all electromagnetic stuff that we'd be talking about is transient.
Mm-hmm.
And things will get back to normal at a certain period.
That's good to know. The other question I have is have you had, if you can talk about it, any direct contact with the work that you do, with the skills that you possess, with ET?
Oh, I'm not going to comment at this time.
Okay.
Thank you anyway.
Sure. And the last question I've got is... God, it popped out of my head.
Email it to me, Alvin.
Okay.
It'll come back.
It'll come back.
All right. See, it's that electromagnetic interferences.
That's right.
Just sitting right next to my computer as we're talking.
All right. And to Macintosh, too.
See. Yeah.
See how psychic I am, Alvin. Email me the question if you want. I'll
okay. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, Alvin.
Bye-bye.
All right. Here's, let's see, where did it go? Here it is. Here's an email question. Jeff, I want to thank you for having such a great show. You're very welcome. We are unable to phone in because we are online for the Internet and listening. I've always been fascinated with power and its true meaning. We do plan to purchase the book, but could you please ask Ingo what steps I can take immediately to expand the base of my thoughts and raise the power of my thoughts to have a new level of empowerment? And what connection is there between remote viewing and power, and how is it used? Blah blah blah.
In the book, at the end of each chapter, I fully believe that a writer should not write about something that the average person can't go out and check out themselves. And there's nothing in this first volume of Power that can't really the observant person can't check out for themselves. And so, at the end of each chapter, I have put a little exercise or something like that that they can use to check out the messages in each different chapter. In Volume 2, I'm going to begin to list a small encyclopedia of human abilities and powers, and with little suggestions about how people might identify these in themselves and begin to enhance them. And now what was the other question?
And what connection is there between remote viewing and power, and how is this used, if it is at all?
Well, I don't think it is used all that much because remote viewing has not really been nurtured on a broad basis. But it's all of the psychic powers, so to speak, are invasive into the status quo. And... people in power don't want the status quo to be invaded very much, and that's why there's no schools to teach ESP or telepathy or anything like that, or remote viewing, or no they're not socially supported anymore.
Right,
so
right.
I can't really answer that question right now.
Well, the big game is to keep tomorrow just like today and yesterday, if possible. That's the game. Thank you, Grant from Garden Bay, for sending that question in. We'll pause and come right back with Ingo Swann in just a minute. Ingo Swann, and when you click on the link information right below Ingo's name at the top of my homepage, you go right to his website, and it opens up with a magnificent piece of his artwork right on the old homepage. And you click on that and actually enter into the homepage, but the greeting card there is marvelous. What is that one called, Ingo, with the waves surging? And the...
That's the middle panel of a larger triptych called Millennium, which I painted between 1982 and 1984. It's the whole painting is 22 feet wide and 6.5 feet high.
I hope that's been on display in the museum before.
It's been out for display a number of times, but I don't let it go out anymore because it's starting to age and crack a little bit.
Like the Sistine Chapel roof.
Well, the canvases are too big, and they sort of get shoved around, and when humidity changes, they sag and tighten up and things. So.
Got it.
But okay. Thank you for your compliment.
You're welcome. Here is Alvin San's question, the one he forgot momentarily. Many systems of magic, manifestation, healing, and telepathy utilize imagination to achieve their respective ends and are successful. Why does remote viewing not encourage imagination?
Well, remote viewing was a very specialized task, and that was to locate physical things on the surface of the planet. And you don't really need imagination to do that. Imagination is mostly composed of imagery anyway, and if you use imaginative imagery to try and locate real-time imagery, you have a noise problem between them.
Noise. All those cell phone towers talk about noise.
Yeah,
boy,
yeah, absolutely.
100 years ago, we had the electromagnetic spectrum was virtually empty. Lightning, solar radiation, that was about it.
Yeah.
Nikola Tesla's experiments in your old home state, that was creating a little bit of energy. But... gosh, now we are in a fishbowl of 24-hour-a-day, nonstop, invasive electromagnetic energy from one end of the spectrum to the other. And how can our human biology adapt to such a radical change in such a short period of time? Answer, it's having a tough time of it.
Gotcha.
Not easy.
I agree.
All right. We have another thing that is on everyone's lips these days, and that is... astrology and Mercury in retrograde. These geologic factors in our lives, these planets around us, how do you see that? Mercury in retrograde, does it mean anything, or is it a sort of a self-fulfilling prophetic window for everyone to have problems?
I began studying astrology in 1962. I've written 3 astrology books, which have never been published either. And Mercury retrograde doesn't bother me because I was born with Mercury retrograde.
He's got an advantage, folks. That's funny. But for the rest of us less fortunates, it is a factor.
It's supposed to mess up communication lines of any kind.
Yeah, any kind.
Any kind, including physical ones.
Yep, yep. And does Ingo Swann lend any credence to that theory?
I do, yes.
All right, enough said. You've heard it.
Absolutely.
And for those of you struggling like I have been, and I tell you, and I didn't really notice Mercury in retrograde until a couple of years ago. People started saying, well, Mercury's, what do you mean? And they explained it, and it's true. It does.
It's true.
The last two have been bitter.
Yeah.
They have been. They seem to be getting worse. There's some Saturn is involved with this one. I don't know what that means, but they say it makes it even more onerous, and I agree. Alan in Portland is standing by. Thank you for waiting, Alan. Your question, please.
I'll try to focus. Since I was born with Mercury in Pisces, and you tend to space out
Give it a good shot. I hope you wrote your question down, Alan.
I'll try to pull it together here. At any rate, another thing you might want to notice, Jeff, by the way, thank you for your tremendous programming.
Thank you.
Amazing.
Thank you.
If you ever get an astrological calendar, you might want to check out the void of the moon, void of course days. Sometimes it's only hours.
Hmm.
Those are unusual times, too. Some unusual things can happen.
Okay.
At any rate, Ingo, I was curious, did you in your travels ever meet with or have any contact with Robert Monroe's work?
Oh, yes. He was a very good friend of mine.
I wondered.
I met him in, I'm sure it was 1970.
Wow.
And we were friends ever since, especially during the latter years of his life. I used to go visit him. And another person that lived near him at least four times a year.
Wow.
And during the last 2 years of his life, we talked on the phone at least once a week.
Wow.
Terrific man.
His second book of his is one of the most remarkable books I think was ever written.
It's terrific. I've had probably one of the biggest pleasures of my life has been able to meet so many wonderful people. Not just like him, but, just among average people, too. And I've had a lot of problems and travail in my life, but it's people that's made it worthwhile.
Could I ask one more question, Jeff?
Yes.
Go ahead, Alan.
Regarding, Jeff has so many programs that are about diet, and sometimes I wonder, besides all the radio waves, as far as the technology controlling us, I kind of wonder what they're doing to our food. And do you have any kind of diet that you work with, or are you aware? Is it in your upper frontal consciousness that diet has an important part of how you feel and what you do?
Yes, my particular body type is responsive to or not. Carbohydrates mess up my particular body type, so I have to go on anti-carbohydrate diets every once in a while. And if I just eat proteins, my brain functions better.
So would that consist of meat or fish? Or
meat and fish and vegetables and things that don't have any carbohydrates in them, such as green beans and celery and a few other things like that.
All right. The secret is out.
Thanks so much.
Okay.
Take care.
Thanks, Alan. And time for, I think, one more call anyhow. Mike in Phoenix, Arizona. Hello, Mike. Welcome.
Hi, Jeff. Hi, Ingo.
Hello.
I had a big question for you. One of the things that consistently perplexed my mind is that I can hear the first one or two notes or three notes in a song, and I immediately know who wrote it and what the name of the song is.
Oh, wonderful.
Well, it's great for, name that tune, but what does it mean in real life? I mean, I do the same thing with other information. I can process something, I see a headline, I know it, and I can instantly categorize the information, where it's coming from, what I can do with it, but it doesn't mean anything. I mean, it's just like having a dictionary in front of you or an encyclopedia. It's there, but it doesn't, I mean, it'd be great if I made money off it, but I don't.
I'm trying to think of the word I can't think of right now. There are some people who have sort of active in them these abilities for extraordinary memory storage.
What's it good for? I mean, other than being the fact of maybe someone who could be photographic memory, which I don't have,
yes.
But I know, I can go down a path once and 10 years later go back and know I can go walk it again, no problem.
Yeah, well, if there was an encyclopedia of our species' abilities and powers, you'd probably be able to identify not only it, but the subsidiary powers and abilities that go with it to make it come up in this kind of strength of it that you have.
So where would you recommend to start searching? Where would you recommend to start looking to try to find what this
An encyclopedia? There isn't one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any specific type of thinking?
The word just came. It's some kind of a savant ability.
Okay.
And the reason that you don't know what to do with it is because you don't know where to apply it, I would think.
That's right.
Right.
You got input, but you got no output for it.
That's right.
Yeah, something so, like that.
Actually, it's a pretty neat thing to have. I sort of have the same kind of thing. I don't forget things. Fortunately, I've got this radio program to plug them into, so.
Which is a great outlet, too.
I have the same thing for faces. Mm-hmm. I can recognize images years and years and years afterwards, but I can't remember the names that go with them.
Well, you got half of it, Ingo. Don't be
greedy.
I got
half of it, yeah.
All right. Thanks, Mike, for
Thank
the
you
call.
Very much.
Thank
Bye.
You. Here's another email question. We live near high power lines in the Arizona desert, and yes, we have TV remote problems. Not only that, the station will abruptly change by itself. What are we in for? What is it doing to our physical lives?
Well, I think there's a lot of literature that one might track down and read. I think probably the internet is loaded with that.
Oh, tons literature. Of it on my site, all over the place. The danger of living near high voltage lines, not necessarily even the big guys, it's those little 4,400 volt lines in your backyard behind your home with the step-down transformers that can be really a problem as well.
It can also be the 60-watt things going through your walls, too.
And that little clock radio, 18 inches from your brain, that bathes
you. Blenders and toasters. And, well, we don't want to get into this product.
It's all true, though. It is. All right, last question for you. I have, in the last year, run across so many people, we have 2 minutes left, Ingo, who have complained about short-term memory loss. I'm in the room here. I came in here for something. What was it? I can't remember. Is this part of the electromagnetic pollution problem, do you think, among other things?
It's so far as I understand it, it's part of the brain is beginning to lose some of its cellular activity.
Mm-hmm.
It slides down, and one of the first things to go is short-term memory.
Boy, when you got little kids, junior high and senior high school kids with that problem,
that can be from other
hope
sources.
Hope it's dietary or something else, yeah.
That can be from other sources, but I've had some really remarkable events of short-term memory failure myself.
Well, you are not alone.
Well, you know, I'm getting on, too.
Well, you don't have to get on.
Well, it's true. I mean, it started earlier.
Don't dwell on that. All right. I would like to have you back on the program anytime you would like to come on, Ingo. That has always been the case.
That's a distinct honor.
Well, thank you.
I don't know if I have anything more worthwhile saying, though.
Well, you've said plenty, and Secrets of Power for our listeners, again, can be purchased only by calling 888-453-4046. Thank you, my good friend, and take care of yourself. Let me know how you like the goodie when you get that right moment to open it up and play it.
Okay. You're a great host. Thank you.
Thanks, Ingo.
Bye.
Good night. Remarkable Ingo Swann, and truly a unique individual on the planet.